Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May 2nd, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
And Jenny Rempel.
Hi.
Alyssa, Jackie, and Tim are away today. Welcome, everyone. Happy International Respect for Chickens Month, and happy International Respect for Chickens Day, which happens tomorrow. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org. After airing. Our first interview today is in honor of International Respect for Chickens Month. Chickens certainly have a special place in my heart, having grown up with them as a child, and I think that one of the most precious, innocent, and beautiful beings on this planet is a baby chick, which is who all chickens start off out, of course, those adorable little balls of fluff. Did you know that Canadians consume more than 1 billion kilograms of chickens every year? When we eat our eggs and buy styrofoam-wrapped chicken in the store, how often do we correlate that these products were born from baby chicks, the sweet little creatures who children love to touch and who elicit their tiny peeps from their little beaks with nary a notion on their mind of the horrors that are to come to their newborn lives from day one in order to satisfy the human appetite. Twyla Francois, Director of Investigations of the national nonprofit Mercy for Animals Canada, will be here today to speak with us about some of MFA Canada's findings in a recent investigation into the lives and treatment of chicks at a Canadian hatchery in Ontario. And we will learn what we need to know as consumers, what these beings go through to produce the meat and eggs that people love to eat so much. And for our feature interview, we have a very special guest on the show. I call her special because I've been reading her life story for the last few weeks in a recently published book that she wrote, and I've been completely touched and inspired by it. She is Ellie Lacks, founder of The Gentle Barn, which is a sanctuary for rescued animals located just outside of Los Angeles in Santa Clarita, California. Stories of animal sanctuaries always fascinate me, and I think you'll really get something out of this interview as well, as Ellie will be speaking to us about how she realized her lifelong dream to start a haven for animals who needed to be healed and loved, and to provide healing and love themselves to the human beings in their lives. Ellie's book is called My Gentle Barn, and to illustrate for you just how sincere and touching this story is, I want to read an excerpt from the beginning of the book where Ellie is speaking about her childhood and one of the many catalysts that occurred to reinforce her vision to dedicate her life to the animals. So here we go. The force that drove me to be with animals defied all reason. I was compelled to have them near me no matter what. I began feeling little whispers deep inside, not in words, just in knowing. Go to the stream, cross the bridge, now turn right. I would follow this invisible force right to a bird who had fallen from her nest or to a turtle in the woods who had cracked his shell, and I would nurse those animals back to health the best I could, sneaking them into my room and making a nest out of straw or mud or setting up a box with a bowl of water and lettuce pilfered from the fridge. It never occurred to me to question how or why this guidance came. For me, it was just like breathing or feeling hungry. I didn't question how or why I needed to breathe. I just breathed. When I was hungry, I followed that hunger to food. In the same way, I followed my inner knowing to the animals that needed help. The shock would come later when I learned that others did not experience this type of connection to animals. I had thought it came with a package: sight, smell, hearing, inner whispers from the animal world. One time, the whispers led me to the lake, where a whole flock of ducks had frozen in the ice-covered water. Only one duck remained unglued to the surface of the lake. That big white duck bobbed and weaved her head as she stood on the shore, clearly distraught by the loss of her whole community. I dug in my pocket for the bread I'd grabbed on my way out the door, and I fed her tiny pieces, luring her all the way home. I named my new duck Snow White and made a nest for her in the garage. Everywhere I went after that, Snow White came along. Simon, that's her dog, would be on one side of me, and this big white waddling duck would be on the other. The Three Musketeers traipsing around the suburbs of St. Louis. And of course, Snow White's story ended no more happily than all the others. My parents forced me to take her back to the lake, and after much protest, I grudgingly obeyed. The next morning, when I ran down to check on her, I found her on the frozen shore with a halo of red snow around her head. The neighborhood gang of rogue boys had found her before I did. "It's all your fault," I yelled that evening as my mom hurried around the kitchen preparing dinner. "You're the one who's making all my animals die." "Don't you talk to your mother that way," my father called from the living room. A moment later, he appeared in the doorway to the kitchen. "You apologize right now. You keep sending them away and making them die." "That's it, out you go," my father said, and he grabbed my arm and ushered me out the back door and locked it after me. It was freezing outside and nearly dark. "You'll see," I shouted at the locked door, my breath making white puffs in the air. "When I grow up, I'll have a huge place full of animals, and I'll show the world how beautiful they are. I would heal all their hurts, and they would heal mine, and anyone who was lonely would come be with us and be healed too." And that's an excerpt from My Gentle Barn. We'll be having the author, Ellie Lax, live on the air in 27 minutes. So please do stay tuned. So last weekend was Earth Day, and Jenny, you celebrated. Tell us how.
Yeah, so in the city of Surrey, they have an annual event called Party for the Planet, where they usually have some musical performances, and it's kind of a community festival hosted by the city. So this year, the new city hall was opening, so the event was just as lively as any other year. And there's always a lot of different earth-friendly vendors and people present. So when I found out that the BC Mobile Dairy Classroom and that the Chicken Farmers Association would be in attendance, I thought it was also necessary to have some vegan representation there. So I put a call out, and a bunch of activists showed up, and Liberation BC was able to organize some volunteers to come and leaflet at this event. And so we positioned ourselves right between two really prominent animal displays. On one side, we had the Mobile Dairy Classroom. And if you haven't seen it before, basically they bring out a big fake cow that's been created. It's a life-sized cow, but it's not real. And so kids can come up and you can sort of milk the udders, and then water comes out of the cow. And there's some sort of technology inside, so it makes a mooing noise when you milk it. And they give out stickers to the kids and that sort of thing. So that's one thing that's happening. And then on the other side of us, there was this chicken display, which I'd never seen before. So basically they had a trailer, and one whole wall of it was covered in plexiglass, so you could see inside. So in this trailer, they had a whole variety of different chickens. So on the one end, they had little baby chicks that were from a hatchery. And then next to them, they had some like middle-aged chicks. Well, they're all babies. They're all very young. But these chicks were quite a bit bigger. And then on the end, they had the largest chicks, and they had a big sign there that said these breeders are 35 weeks old. So if you do the math, those chickens are quite young. They're babies still, in my opinion. And so they were not really lying about anything. They were being quite honest and forthcoming with what was happening. And you could even see they had some big photos blown up in the background of these displays, where you could see the barns, which are full of hundreds and hundreds of animals. So I don't think they were being dishonest about anything, and it kind of helped our cause to have them being so forthcoming with what the conditions are like in these places. So of course, these chicks seemed to be handpicked, and they had very minimal signs of feather loss and other common things like that that happen in these types of situations. But they were still so young, and so it was pretty obvious to me how unfair it was that their lives were ended so early and that they were being used in this way. So I was glad that we got to do some vegan outreach with the public there. And in Surrey, there's a lot of diversity and a lot of different cultural backgrounds and different ages of people, seniors, young people, all sorts of folks live in Surrey. So there's actually quite a large number of people who are already vegetarian there. So we had some good conversations with them about using some alternatives to dairy, milks, and kind of the cruelty involved in that. And a lot of families and people with children too. So we gave out a lot of literature, and hopefully some people read it and took a look at it later on. So you never know what's going to change someone's mind or help them to learn and see about this information. But yeah, it was interesting to see the animal vendor showing up, and I was glad that the activists could also have a display there.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's wonderful that you guys were there and giving out literature and talking to the children, because I don't know why the dairy and egg board were there in the first place, or the chicken industry.
It was Earth Day, right?
Earth Day, yeah. Did you have the environmental impact of the farming industry on leaflets?
So the one leaflet we were giving out was called Eat the Planet, and it's about the environmental impacts of our eating choices.
Perfect.
is your big chance, so don't blow it.
We're here to present the cutting-edge radio you want to hear. What about a program featuring just local Vancouver bands?
No market for that.
We have an expert on gospel music.
No.
Our public affairs programs dig deep with voices other stations won't touch.
No.
Programs with First Nations hosts?
Sorry, no market for that.
We've got a lot of shows in other languages for people all over the world. Folk music?
You're kidding, right? Who would sponsor that?
Can't make big bucks with programs people want to hear? You have to go to Co-op Radio for that. Community-owned radio. Now at 100.5 FM, the switch is on.
So now we have some animal-related events for you that are coming up soon. So the first thing I wanted to talk about was the Doxa Film Festival is in town from May 2nd to May 11th. That's the last day of the festival. And there's a film called Virunga, which exposes some things that are happening with African national parks. And there's a lot of work going on there to try and save the mountain gorilla population. So if you're interested in learning about this initiative, you can watch the Virunga documentary at the Doxa Film Festival from May 2nd to 11th in Vancouver. Some other events that are coming up is, as of May 1st, Isabel's Pet Portrait fundraiser is happening. So if you're not aware, Isabel is a 6-year-old girl who's offering to draw portraits of people's pets for anyone who donates $10 or more to the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC. So if you want more information, you can view her portfolio of work online, and she says that these would make a great Mother's Day gift. So full details are available at facebook.com/Isabel's Pet Portraits. Pretty cool stuff.
Very cute.
There's also a lot of bake sales happening in town. So tomorrow, Saturday, May 3rd, the Vancouver Animal Defense League is having a cupcake sale at Grandview Park from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. And they're going to be selling vegan cupcakes to support their activist activities. Then at the same time, also on Saturday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., the Langley Herbivores out in Langley are going to be selling vegan baked goods at the Marketplace IGA in Walnut Grove. So you can get some yummy stuff there. Then on Monday, the Vancouver-based Vegan Support Circle is having a special drop-in session open to anyone who wants to attend. So that's Monday, May 5th at 6:30 p.m. This will be at Eternal Abundance on Commercial Drive, so you can join in this discussion of community care and join the Vancouver Vegan Support Circle for that. Then, on a personal note, I also wanted to plug my band Hello Harmless is playing at Joe's Apartment tomorrow with another band that also has a vegan band member called Season to Attack. So tickets are $12 at the door or $10 in advance. And I'm hoping that a lot of activists come out because Joe's Apartment is a really great venue and they offer a lot of vegan drink options. They don't serve food there, so that's great. However, they do have a few taxidermy displays up, and I think they were added recently because I didn't notice them in the past when I was there, but I'm hoping that a lot of people will come and write them nice letters saying how much fun they had and how great it would be if they take the taxidermy down. So if you're interested in doing a little entertainment-based activism, come to Joe's Apartment tomorrow night.
Perfect. And so every Friday, of course, is the weekly chicken vigils, which are held from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. outside this Hallmark Slaughterhouse on Commercial Drive and Hastings. And so you can come out every Friday morning. I was there this morning. It's always great. It's always a fun time waving at people and letting them know what's happening behind those big gray walls. And of course, it is Respect for Chickens Day. So this Sunday, May 4th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., Liberation BC, which hosts the weekly vigils, is having a special vigil to honor the chickens. So like I said, it's Sunday, May 4th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. outside the Hallmark Slaughterhouse. As I mentioned, it's located on Commercial Drive in Hastings. And then we'll be there for a bit. And then after, they'll be going to Church's Chicken on Hastings Street to leaflet. And they'll be leafleting Commercial Drive after as well until they get to Eternal Abundance where there'll be lunch. So I'm going to be there. I think it'll be a great way to celebrate International Chickens Day and month.
Well, thank you for that, Cynthia, and Jenny, too. Our first interview is with Twyla Francois, who is here to speak with us in honor of International Respect for Chickens Month. Twyla is the Director of Investigations for the national organization Mercy for Animals Canada, and she comes here today in the aftermath of the public release of yet another undercover investigation on the farming industry in Canada that this time took place in a Maple Leaf-owned chicken hatchery located in Ontario. What happens to the baby chicks in the meat and egg industries? How do those cute little balls of fluff become chicken on your plate or produce the eggs in your morning breakfast? Is it an idyllic existence as we'd like to imagine for these newborn babies? Twyla is here today to share with us some of the discoveries that have been made and recently broadcast to the public, and we'll learn about how these tiny creatures are treated in their short existence to feed the human population. Hello, Twyla, and welcome back to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi, Allison. It's great to be here.
So yet again, Mercy for Animals Canada has released more video footage of animal treatment in a Canadian facility, this time at a chicken hatchery in Ontario. Before getting into the particular findings of the investigation, can you just tell us about just the regular standard practices of how baby chicks bred for the broiler industry are treated from the day they are born, which was also documented in the video?
Well, I think to understand the scope of the suffering, it's important to have some stats. So over 627 million chickens are raised as broiler chickens in Canada. So these are the meat birds. The vast majority of them start their lives in large industrial hatcheries like the one we investigated. And as you see in the footage, the pace of the hatcheries is incredibly fast. So the newly hatched chicks are handled really roughly and mindlessly. They're flung by their fragile wings, they're thrown, they're dropped on concrete floors. And the workers are actually separating the chicks by sex, throwing the males down one chute and the females down another. But because they're working so quickly, a lot of the chicks are getting slammed into the metal dividers. And really, so their lives begin and end in industrial factories where they're handled like inanimate widgets, really, rather than the thinking, feeling beings that they are.
And so what were the discoveries in the video that was taken of these newly born chicks at the hatchery in Ontario?
It might be easiest if I just describe the process of from when the chicks hatch and what happens to them. So they hatch in baskets, and then these baskets are loaded into a machine called a separator. It separates the chicks from the shells, but many of the birds actually become crushed in the machinery or lodged in the machine, and they're left there. There's absolutely no way to retrieve them. So from the separator, those baskets, which are supposed to be empty at this point, the live chicks should have fallen down onto the conveyor belt. Those baskets are passed through a scalding hot washing machine, but every day our investigator documented dozens of chicks whose feet were caught in the baskets, who were put through the searing hot machine. And so those birds were drowned and scalded alive. And it was actually so routine that the worker who manned that station laughed about it and told our investigator, yeah, they boil. And she said she feels absolutely no sympathy for them anymore. The other chicks that did fall down onto the conveyor belt are then roughly picked up by workers called sexers, who are the people that are separating the males from the females. And we actually learned, we were surprised that they were sexing them, because that's usually only done in the egg industry. But here we learned that they were sexing them because the females actually grow smaller. And so the demand for them is for whole rotisserie birds, like at Swiss Chalet, or, you know, if you see them under the heat lamp at grocery stores, those are all female chickens. And then the workers are also picking out the sick, deformed, and injured birds. They're flinging them into baskets, and then they're dumping them into giant macerators, which is it's just a giant grinder with rotating blades. And so they're ground up alive. And that this grinding practice is actually standard right across the hatchery industry. But at this Maple Leaf plant, they were overloading them so much that workers had to use squeegees to push them towards the spinning blades.
So in this industry with such a large amount of output with all the baby chicks being processed, which looks to me to be in the thousands at this facility, how is it even possible for the workers to treat these tiny newborn creatures with care? You know, the care that they deserve in their fragile state. They've just been born. They still have the shell on them. It's not possible, is it?
No, it's not. And the workers are actually expected to process 1,700 chicks an hour. The workers who fail to meet that quota are disciplined, contrary to what Maple Leaf says. So there's really no time to see the animals as the individuals that they are. They have to work so quickly that it's natural that they become desensitized. And I think the other shocking thing to most Canadians is that there's very little oversight to ensure the welfare of these birds. So there's actually, like, shockingly few laws that exist to protect farmed animals from abuse and neglect. The government does not regulate or oversee the conditions. The standards that are set by industry, and compliance is voluntary. Like, this is completely crazy to most people. So it's really without undercover investigations like ours, there's really no meaningful watchdogs to protect animals from egregious abuse in these facilities.
Can you touch upon the standard of baby chicks in the organic egg industry, for example? I know that they also come from hatcheries. Are they similar in the types where the males are no use in the industry?
Yes, yeah. So in the egg industry, the males are of no use because they're never going to lay eggs. So they're immediately ground up alive, immediately after birth. One of the things, too, because this was a broiler chicken hatchery, we didn't see the mutilations without painkillers. But if it had been an egg-laying facility, you know, to hatch egg-laying chickens, the females would have been mutilated. So they would have had part of their beaks, which are actually sensitive and innervated. They're like under our fingernails. They're actually completely cut off. And they also have toes cut off or increasingly microwaved off. And those amputations cause lifelong pain.
I did not know about the microwaving. That's definitely news to me. So when people say they're eating, you know, people think that they're making better choices. They say they're eating organic eggs. It doesn't really matter. I mean, what would you say to them?
Unfortunately, organic, free range, free run, whatever the label is, there are very few labeling laws in Canada, and so companies are exploiting customers' desires to have a less cruelly produced egg. So they can say whatever they want. And the other issue is, you know, like you're saying, the chicks that arrive on those farms, even if they're organic, they come from these hatcheries.
Right.
They're also caught by the chicken catchers, you know, the same men who come in and are paid by the trailer load, not by the hour. So, you know, they still go through the same industrial system at the beginning and end of their lives.
So as a vast comparison in a natural setting, what would the life of a newborn baby chick be like?
Completely opposite of this. In nature, a chick's life is really centered around their mother. Their mother peeps to them while they're still in the eggs, and they peep back to her. So they've already started communicating even before they're born. And when they're hatched, the chicks stay very close to their mother. They get warmth, security, comfort, and protection, and hide under her wings. And that's really, I actually rescued a couple of broiler chickens. They were just little baby fuzzball chicks. And they were crying, and we could not figure out. You know, we had satisfied feed and water. They weren't too cold. They weren't too hot. And we put our hand on them, and they immediately quieted down. And that's when we realized that really the overriding concern for a chick is simply being protected and having a mother around. So, you know, all of, at least the vast majority of Canada's 627 million chickens, they never actually know their mother, and they never know the experience of being a mother themselves.
What do you say to people who say that chickens are domesticated and we have to use them because they can't be in the wild in that type of setting anymore?
Well, I think it's, you know, this is always the question we get. Oh, if everybody went vegan overnight, these animals would be turned out into the wild and they'd be crazy loose. And what would happen to them? They'd be preyed upon. They just wouldn't be born. You know, there was 250,000 chicks being born or hatching in this one hatchery every single day. They simply wouldn't come into existence. And I would argue that no existence is better than an existence that is filled with a life of torture.
And also, these chickens have been manipulated to, especially the egg layers, to lay eggs every day. That doesn't happen in the wild, the original chicken that they came from. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, yeah, you're exactly right. My chickens, they did lay eggs, but it was in clutches. So, they had a very natural cycle. They would lay a certain number in a clutch, and then they would sit on those eggs for, you know, whatever the incubation period would have been. They've just been so genetically altered. And the chickens that we've rescued that were egg-laying chickens, they die so incredibly young. And generally, it's because of cancers of their reproductive system because they're forced to lay so many eggs.
So going back to the hatchery investigation, can you tell us what has been the response from Maple Leaf Foods to this investigation, which went public to the media just a few weeks ago?
Maple Leaf has not taken our investigation seriously. They've really done the absolute minimum. Anything that they've done is too little, too late. You know, they knew about the problems at this facility. They had to.
Really?
Yes. So that's really disappointing. And so we're really hoping that people can use their power as purchasers and their voice. And tell Maple Leaf, you can go to our petition, I'll give you the link shortly, but tell them that they have the power and the responsibility to ensure that at least minimum animal welfare standards are being met in their facilities. And that's why we're asking them to install video monitoring systems and live stream it to the internet to show consumers what's really going on behind the closed doors of their facilities instead of just expecting us to take their word on it.
So you're doing a lot of investigations, MFA Canada, MFA in the States. It's always the same thing over and over. I'm finding the response from these places. They're saying, oh, it was a one-time happening. Isn't that kind of ironic? Because it keeps happening. Like, don't they realize that?
Exactly.
One-time
yep.
happening. Oh, just some, you know, just some, you know, bad people that happened to be there at that one time that you just happened to get on camera. That person has since been fired, you know, case closed. It's all good. What's your response to that?
And that's exactly what they did with this. You know, the one worker that we put in the final video saying that she no longer has any feelings for the birds anymore, mm-hmm. they didn't even fire her. They just put her on leave. I don't know if it's paid. You know, mm-hmm. This is generally the way. You know, they sort of sweep they pin it on a couple of scapegoats. They sweep them under the rug for a while. They'll be back. You know, they'll bring them back on. But in the meantime, you know, the general processes of handling 1,700 chicks an hour, you know, like all of the cruelty of the handling, the basic processes of running a hatchery remain the same. So, and that's exactly what they've done in this case.
I really applaud you for doing this investigation on chick hatcheries. As I was saying earlier in the show, the reason why I wanted to feature baby chicks on our show for International Respect for Chickens Day and Month is because I think that they are creatures that just really go largely overlooked when people are thinking even about chicken welfare. They don't think about the babies, the baby chicks. Mm-hmm. These animals are just tiny. They're so precious. And mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had experience with them. I grew up with chickens myself and chicks. Oh. And it's just, you know, I just really want people to know what's happening out there. And I want to touch upon, too, the solution of, you know, as a consumer, we can take ourselves out of the whole system. Can you maybe tell us your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, so there's a couple of things we're asking people to do is to sign the petition to Maple Leaf, let them know that we're not going to let them get away with sweeping this under the rug. So the people can go to our website. It's mercyforanimals.ca/hatchery. But really, as you're saying, most importantly, consumers can choose to protect chickens from egregious cruelty by simply leaving it off of their plates. And we actually have a website designed for people that are just making the transition and need to learn, you know, what do you do with this block of tofu? Mm-hmm. So we've got a great website called choosevege.ca.
And scrambled tofu is one of my favorite meals, by the way. Thank you, Twyla, for coming on the show today to speak with us about the recent MFA Canada chicken hatchery investigation and the plight of baby chicks in the meat and egg industries. To find out more about the investigation and to sign the petition there, please visit mercyforanimals.ca/hatchery. Thank you, Twyla, and have a good day.
Thank you so much.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in the downtown east side in Vancouver in unceded Coast Salish territories. So now getting into some news. So some local news here in Vancouver. A two-year-old Siberian tiger, Hanny, was found dead at the Greater Vancouver Zoo. Hanny is one of two sister Siberian tigers brought to the Greater Vancouver Zoo in 2012, and she was found dead on April 30th, which is this week, by her keepers. Hanny and her sister Hannah were born May 22nd, 2011, at Seoul Zoo in South Korea. Jody Henderson, a general manager of the zoo, said Hanny appeared to be healthy but became lethargic, was behaving abnormally, and stopped eating yesterday. Hanny died just 22 days before reaching her third birthday. This is the second Siberian tiger the zoo has lost in 4 months. Sweetie, an 18-year-old Siberian tiger, was euthanized last December after suffering breathing problems, a loss of appetite, and ongoing lethargy. So we're waiting to see what the autopsy will say for Hanny. And so that's at the Greater Vancouver Zoo. And in other animal entertainment news in Vancouver, Vancouver Aquarium seals were left blind or dead after transfer to Marineland. So the Vancouver Aquarium sent five harbor seals to a facility in Ontario. This facility, called Marineland, has been long condemned by animal rights activists. One of the seals is dead, and the other four are permanently blind after being exposed to poor water conditions at Marineland Canada. According to three former Marineland employees interviewed separately for this story, the story was covered in the Georgia Strait, which is a local paper here in Vancouver, the animals were transferred to the facility from the Vancouver Aquarium in 2009. The seals arrived in Niagara Falls Aquarium without apparent injury or illness, so they were healthy, except for one animal, which employees were told may have neurological conditions. The seals later suffered from poor water chemistry involving spikes in chlorine and ozone levels. And this incident was highlighted actually in the Toronto Star when Marineland, this aquarium in Ontario, was exposed for their horrific conditions they have in their animals. So one of the trainers at Marineland actually said that these seals were healthy when they arrived at Marineland, and he added that they could have been released into the wild. This is really interesting because the Vancouver Aquarium likes to hide behind the rescue efforts. It does do rescue efforts, but clearly something happened here where these animals were not put back into the wild, and said they were transferred to Marineland, and I'm not too sure if they were sold to Marineland or what the deal was, but they definitely weren't rehabilitated and back into the wild, so that's unfortunate.
Related to the aquarium, in the province newspaper today, half of the opinion page was dedicated to responses for a recent editorial they ran related to efforts from activists to end the captive cetaceans at the Vancouver Aquarium, so you can check that out in the province. Also in the province today, there was a lot of animal stories. A former poultry worker is in court once again. So there's a former poultry employee who was employed by Superior Poultry Processing, and he also was employed by Hallmark Poultry Processors. And so I guess they had a large turkey order to fill in 2010, but they were not able to provide turkey at that time, so they filled the order with chicken meat instead. People were not receiving the product that they thought they were paying for. And in addition, he also violated some reports to the health inspector. So he was falsified these health inspector reports about 31 salmonella tests related to some chicken that was bound for South Africa. And there are more charges still to be laid against this former poultry employee here in BC. So some local news there.
Yeah, and that's the Hallmark Poultry is where the chicken vigils are every Friday. And of course, the one this Sunday for International Day for the Chickens. And then SeaWorld, so this is good news, I think wonderful news. The number of people visiting SeaWorld in the U.S. has dropped by almost 15% in the first quarter of this year as the controversy surrounding the park continues. Of course, Blackfish, the documentary, which tells a story about the SeaWorld trainer Don Branchcho, was was very popular, and many people have seen it. And since the release of Blackfish, 1.2 million people have signed a petition urging California to ban killer whale shows in the states. They still have killer whales in their shows all over America. And also, just quickly out of China, has moved to protect more endangered species. So last week, a committee brought upon the Illegal Wildlife Trade Act, and they recognized that anyone who eats endangered species or buys them for other purposes is punishable up to 10 years in jail. So there was already a protection act, but they hadn't clarified it. So this committee got together and clarified the act. And Cheryl Low, a person from the Wildlife Fund of Nature in China, said that hopefully this is a step in the right direction, but we still have to watch to see if they'll actually enforce and execute this legislation. So that would be great.
Thank you for the news, Cynthia and Jenny. Our feature interview today is with Ellie Lax. She is the founder of a special place located in Santa Clarita, California, called the Gentle Barn. It's a sanctuary for over 170 rescued animals who go there to be rehabilitated and loved and to live out the rest of their lives in harmony and peace, often coming out of terrible situations of exploitation at the hands of humankind. The Gentle Barn was founded in 1999 and has since then become a haven for many lucky animals, but also lucky people, as Ellie strives to help at-risk and special needs children as well by having them come to the sanctuary to interact with animals and learn to heal their own pain with them. She has so many special stories to share about the animals and her journey, and has actually just written a book all about it called My Gentle Barn. It's an amazing read, and we are so honored to have Ellie here on the show today to share some of her stories with us and her message for the animals. Hello, Ellie, and welcome to the Animal Voices Show.
Hi, thank you. I love being had on the show. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about The Gentle Barn. I've been so moved and inspired by your book, as I'm sure many people have. You had me in tears by page 6 and completely captivated throughout. I just couldn't put it down. This book is the story of your life journey from being a young child who had a dream from the age of 7 years old, but who went through many struggles throughout the years to get to the place where what you really wanted to do in life became a reality. Can you please give us a glimpse into what this entailed and start by describing for us the special connection that you've shared with animals since you were a young child?
Sure, yeah. When I was a kid, I felt a bit lonely. And it was always animals that were like my best friends, my teachers, and my healers. And so I began, as soon as I could walk, I was off trudging through the woods with my dog Simon. And we would play with the frogs and go find salamanders in the woods. And it was always nature that gave me the most peace and the most comfort. And it was always animals that showed me that I was okay the way that I was and that I wasn't so alone. And then when I got a little older, around 6 or 7 years old, I noticed that sometimes animals need help. You know, sometimes birds fall out of their nests or turtles break their shells or animals get injured and lost. And so I started bringing them home. And my plan was to have a house full of animals that I saved, and they would be my friends. And my parents were not amused. They did not want a house full of animals. So they would get rid of them when I was at school, and I'd come home to find them gone. And it was very, very, very upset.
You started out by just rescuing cats and dogs, and then one day you came upon Mary, who started what the Gentle Barn is today. Can you tell us about Mary and how you found her?
Sure. I was running an errand, and there was a petting zoo I'd never seen before, and so there was a whole bunch of animals there, and it didn't smell quite right. So I went in just to check it out, and the scene was absolutely dismal. There was a lot of abuse and neglect and suffering going on there. So I was running to the door as fast as I could, and there was a very old goat that was blocking my exit, and she looked like she was about to keel over any minute. But the difference between her and the other animals is that she looked me right in the eye, and she was asking me for help. She was saying, please, please, can you help me? And so I just couldn't leave her there. And I said, well, I live in a little half-acre backyard. I can take a goat home. So I asked the owner if I could have her, and she said no. And I said, can I buy her name your price? And the lady said no. And I said, well, I can't leave without her, so I'm going to stay here till you say yes. And I stayed there for 12 days. And on the 13th day, she said, lady, take this goat and get out of here. so I brought Mary home and I healed her, and that was basically the beginning of the Gentle Barn.
At the Gentle Barn, you focus on rescuing and taking in animals who have been very much neglected and abused, and older animals as well. Why is it that you choose these animals?
You know, I wanted to be the one that would take animals no one else wanted. There's lots of dog, cat, horse, turtle rescues out there that focus on the young, the socialized, the healthy animals that they can rehome. But what happens to the animals that are too old, too sick, too lame, or too scared to be adoptable? Well, typically the other rescues don't take them in, and the animal shelters put them down. So, I don't know, I kind of relate to someone who feels like they're alone and they have no resources and they have no options and no one will help them, and the Gentle Barn will swoop in and will help them.
So you say that you've rescued the animals and they've rescued you. In the book, you also say that animals seem to heal emotionally much more quickly and completely than humans do. Could you tell us a bit more and share with us some stories of psychologically or emotionally broken animals you've taken in and who have completely turned around because of your rehabilitation with them?
Yeah. I think what happens is when people are, well, when animals are in bad situations, they suffer. And then when they're taken to good situations, I think once they really believe it's true, then they kind of let the past go and they live in their happiness. I think people, we're a little bit different. When we're in bad situations, we suffer, but I also think that we make up beliefs about ourselves and the world that we carry with us no matter where we go. So even when we're in good situations, we carry with us those negative beliefs. So when I was a kid, I believed that I was not lovable. And today I live in my beautiful house on the beautiful Gentle Barn. I'm surrounded with 170 animals. I'm living my dream. But it's taken me so long to stay in my happiness because I'm carrying along the belief inside myself that I'm not lovable. And I think that's the difference between humans healing and animals healing. I think that animals live more in the moment and they carry less beliefs with them. So I'll give you a perfect example. We have a horse named Bonsai. He's a miniature horse. And for the first 6 years of his life, he was owned by an alcoholic who, when she was in a good mood, everything was fine. But when she got drunk, she'd punch him in the face and abuse him. So by the time he was 6 years old, he didn't trust anyone. He was completely wild and scared. Finally, she was taken to jail on drug charges, and he was confiscated and brought to the Gentle Barn. And at the Gentle Barn, we worked 2.5 years to gain his trust. And it took a very, very long time because he inherently believed that people were not trustworthy. But slowly he saw us with the other animals and he saw us with himself, how gentle we were, and that obviously we didn't drink and we didn't hit. And eventually he came to trust us. Well, when he made the decision that he was finally safe and sound, he let the past go. And now that life doesn't live inside of him. He only knows happiness and joy and being in the moment and being safe at the Gentle Barn. One day we had a field trip of kids who came to the Gentle Barn, and they were from a foster care facility, and there was one boy there that was very, very, very angry. I mean, he walked off the bus angry, and he kicked at the dirt angrily, and he wouldn't look at anybody, and his arms were folded angrily, and he was just a very, very angry kid. He was about 9, 10, 11 years old, somewhere like that. And when we started our talk, I started talking about Bonsai, the miniature horse, and telling his story. And by the time I finished the story, this boy ran up to me, and he pulled on my shirt, and he said, please, please, tell me that story again. And I told him again and again and again. I probably told the story about 5 times. And then he ran into the barn, and he found Bonsai, and he flung his arms around Bonsai's neck and said, Bonsai, you're going to be okay. I just know it. I just know you're going to be okay. And so at this point, I went to find the counselors, and I said, hey, what's that boy's story? What's going on here? And they said, that boy has the exact same story. He, too, had been abused by an alcoholic parent and been removed from the home when he was around 6 years old. And he's so angry and trusts no one that he won't talk to his therapist and he won't make friends and he doesn't do well in school. And he's going nowhere fast, and the only way they can control him is with high doses of meds because they can't get through this child. And it was really meeting Bonsai that turned this boy around. And slowly, slowly, because he knew that he was not alone and that Bonsai knew his pain, and if Bonsai found happiness and love and could trust, then the boy felt that he could too. So really, Bonsai saved this boy's life. And that's the cycle of healing that we do at the Gentle Barn every day.
I just love that story. And I love how part of your vision for the Gentle Barn was to help heal animals as well. In the book, you were saying, okay, so I've got the animals, everything's, you know, going well. I need to start the next component of my dream, which is to bring in at-risk kids. You didn't know what you were doing. This hadn't been done before. And now years later, you're still running this program. Can you tell us just a bit about that and the work that you do with helping heal humans as well?
Yeah, it really works. The kids come in and they feel like they're alone against the world. They feel like nobody understands them. They don't want to sit and be vulnerable and talk about their feelings because they're used to kind of walking around saying to the world, oh, I'm fine. I don't need anybody. I'm fine. And so it's really hard to kind of get inside them. So whereas it's not very safe to talk directly to them, we can talk indirectly to them through a story of an animal. And all of a sudden, they're all ears, they're identifying. We can talk to them through an animal story about forgiveness and courage and trust. And really, it's the animals that are inspiring them to heal, to love again, and to reach for infinite possibilities. And it's very, very successful.
Well, I would love to hear more about the animals. You told so many heartwarming stories in your book, such as about Buddha the cow and the special role she played in the lives of animals. Can you please tell us about Buddha?
Yeah, Buddha is so special. She was our very first cow, and I actually lost my first husband because of her. My first husband said, well, it's her or me, and right. I had her for 13 and a half glorious years. It was the best decision I ever made. She was wonderful. From the minute I met her, I knew she wasn't any ordinary, quote-unquote, cow. She seemed so wise and gracious and loving and giving. And she had this energy about her. All I had to do was just sit by her shoulder, and she would wrap her neck around me and just hug me and hold me. And just being near her made me feel like everything was okay. And not only did I get hugs from her every single day for 13 and a half glorious years, but she also inspired many, many kids to be soft and vulnerable and open. Like I said, the kids that we work with are so tough, and their motto is to never be vulnerable. So Buddha was the perfect icebreaker because they would come, and even if they wouldn't look at me or talk to me, my one rule at the Gentle Barn is that everybody has to hug a cow. And the minute these kids' faces would touch Buddha's soft back, their whole faces would melt into soft young children. It was really incredible. She transformed so many people. And in her life here at the Gentle Barn, she gave out over 300,000 hugs.
Wow.
She was amazing. And she was amazing also. She would adopt all our orphan baby cows that we rescued. So every time we did a rescue from, like, we regularly rescue calves from veal crates. And they would come in, and of course they wouldn't have any calves mothers. And Buddha would always adopt them and lick them and lay next to them and befriend them. And she actually did that to all the animals. She was amazing.
In the book, a constant theme that runs throughout is the message of pursuing your dreams. The Gentle Barn is what it is today, despite all the challenges you faced, because you never gave up and you believe that you can manifest your dreams and that the universe will provide. I would love to hear more from you about this philosophy, because it's what has gotten you to the point where you've been able to make a difference in so many lives of animals and human beings.
Yeah, I think that we're all born with a fire inside of us. We're all born with a dream, a hope, a skill set, something that just really makes us feel alive, something that we're so passionate about. And somewhere along the line in our lives, you know, life is hard and we have to pay the bills, and sometimes life throws curveballs at us, and just trying to get through life, a lot of the times we'll just forget our dreams and just try to survive and pay the bills and get through life. And I hear it all the time. You know, people come to the Gentle Barn and they're like, oh, my God, this was my dream. You're living my dream. And I just consider myself very, very lucky that I never gave up. I would not take no for an answer. There were many years in my life that I got lost and pulled off my course, but I always found my way back to the path that was intended for me, which is I wanted to save animals. I wanted to heal them. I wanted to show them love and life, and I wanted together to help all the lonely people in the world. And this really was an idea that I came up with when I was 7 years old. And It took me a while. It took me 30 years or 23 years. But I never gave up on it. I never took no for an answer. And I finally was able to start the Gentle Barn little by little. And, yes, I overcame excruciating hurdles and lots of hard times. And this whole journey with the Gentle Barn really overall has taught me so much faith. I think that when we can trust the passions inside of us and know that whatever dream we have is what we're supposed to do here, and we keep problem solving and we keep allowing the universe to lead us to where we're supposed to go, I think when we carry that faith with us, I think that we can come up with our dreams. I think that, and this is what we tell the kids that we work with, I think that we're here for two reasons on this planet. I think we're here to find ourselves, and we're here to live our dreams. And so if there is a burning desire inside of us to do something, and it's all we can think about, and it's all we've ever wanted, then that is what we're supposed to do. We just have to keep problem solving to figure out a way to it. And so it's really hanging on for dear life to that faith.
That's a great message.
Yeah.
So you open your doors to the public to meet the animals, and in fact, you have public tours every Sunday at the Gentle Barn. In just your general visitor program, can you tell us about how people have reacted to their visits to meet the animals and perhaps how this has played a role in changing their hearts and minds about their views on animals and the way we treat them in our society?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I met my first chicken when I was 11 years old. That scene is in the book where there was a chicken in my school, and she was really, really scared. And so I was holding her and telling her it was okay while the other kids, you know, ran around screaming and yelling. And I was telling her she was okay. And then the principal came in and said, oh, don't eat the chicken. I mean, don't pet the chicken. She's got to go to the slaughterhouse. And in that moment, I learned that chicken, the animal, is the same thing as chicken and rice. You know, I didn't know that before. Mm-hmm. And so from that moment, I said, oh, my gosh. I'm never going to eat animals again. And I think there's a disconnect in our society. I think that people live blissfully in our concrete, high-tech worlds, and we've really kind of etched animals out of the picture, save for, you know, dogs and cats and an occasional horse, but really farm animals are kind of out of our lives. And so there's a disconnect where we get something on our plate and it's spiced right and it smells good and we eat it, but we really don't really think where it came from and who it was and what life that used to be. And so I always thought that the Gentle Barn was this place where people can come and hug a cow and give a pig a tummy rub and sit on the floor and cuddle a turkey and watch her fall asleep in your lap. And it can connect those dots. It can connect us back to these wonderful, peaceful, loving, smart, affectionate animals that should be cherished and loved and protected. And if we maintain those connections and we can see these animals face to face and eye to eye, then maybe our hearts will be opened and maybe we can make more compassionate choices for how we live and we don't have to hurt them so much. And so the Gentle Barn is open every Sunday from 10 to 2, and people can do just that. They can come and hug the cows and cuddle the turkeys and give the pigs tummy rubs and hear their stories, and I guarantee that people will leave with their hearts wide open.
And I'm actually going to come and visit you in July for sure when I'm there in the summer, so I'm so looking forward to that, Ellie. So how can people help the animals and the Gentle Barn?
Well, our goal, our master goal, is to have Gentle Barns in every state in the country, and then we want to go global. My plan is that if every person in the world can hug a cow and cuddle a turkey and know that we're all the same, we just look different, I think really we could have peace on Earth. So to achieve that, we need a lot of support. We can't do that on our own. So there's lots of ways that people can support our endeavors. One, of course, is just to donate. If they're local to Santa Clarita or Los Angeles, they can come and volunteer and help us love and heal the animals. If they're far away, they can donate. They can help us buy hay or pay for vet care. And the funnest way to support the Gentle Barn is to sponsor an animal. If people go to gentlebarn.org and they go to our virtual barn, they can see pictures and stories of most of our animals. And then they can go through and pick their favorite one. And then they can sponsor that animal, where each month a nominal donation goes towards that animal's care, so it helps us care for more animals. But at the same time, they get a picture and a story of how that animal's doing and a regularly emailed update on that animal every 2 or 3 months. And that way they get to be intimately involved for the life of that animal And so they're connected to a specific animal. That animal is getting support, and all that support goes to enabling us to rescue more animals.
So I love that sponsor an animal program. Other sanctuaries do it, and I think it's such a great way to help out because you can choose, you know, any animal that you want, whatever you can afford. And I will be sponsoring a chicken myself, so just wanted to let you know that maybe I can meet her this summer. Thank you, Ellie, so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about the Gentle Barn Animal Sanctuary, which is located in Santa Clarita, California. You are a true inspiration and a hero for the animals. I encourage everyone to read Ellie's book called My Gentle Barn and to visit the sanctuary if you can, to sponsor an animal, and to visit their website to find out more at gentlebarn.org. Thank you so much, Ellie, and have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us for next week's show. That is May 9th, 2014, where we'll be doing the Vegan Straight Edge Show. So we're going to give you all the information about what it means to be straight edge. This is a subculture usually defined by living a life free of drugs and alcohol. And there's a whole lot of young people and people of all ages that are taking part in this movement and helping animals and changing their lives in the process. So we're going to be interviewing some different musicians that are part of that movement about the vegan straight edge scene around the world. We here at Animal Voices also want to connect with you and stay connected with you when we're not on the air. So you can do that by visiting us on Facebook. You can search Animal Voices Vancouver to find us. And we're also on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We also love to hear from you, so you can send your suggestions or comments about the show either to our Facebook page, or you can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And also, we encourage you to check out our website, animalvoices.org, where you can download this show and all of our other previous programs as podcasts. And they're also on iTunes as well. So lots of ways to connect with us. We are going to close the show now with a song called The Sanctuary Song, Someone Not Something, by Daniel Redwood. And today we are dedicating this song to all of the animals at the Gentle Barn. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. You've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Thank you so much for joining us today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
You are someone, not something. You're welcome here with your broken wing or wounded leg or branded skin. This is your home now, come on in. Known the pain, now feel the joy. What God has made, no man should destroy. From this day on, in the sun and play till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you a sanctuary song. It means as much to you as mine to me. I know that this is true. Your loving heart reaches out to mine. the time. This is the place for us all to feel compassion's healing grace and pray for peace for all who share this one earthly home, so green, so fair, where you can run, jump and play till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, yes, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you this sanctuary song. May the whole world sing for you. May the whole world be for you a sanctuary song.